Random House Audio presents Promises to Keep on Life and Politics by Joe Biden. Read for you by Mark Deakins. The woods are lovely, dark, and deep, but I have promises to keep, and miles to go before I sleep, and miles to go before I sleep. Robert Frost. Prologue. The first principle of politics, the foundational principle, I learned in the 1950s in my grandpop's kitchen when I was about 12 or 13 years old. My parents had recently moved us to Delaware, but most Friday nights, Mom and Dad would load me, my sister Val, my brother Jimmy, and the baby, Frankie, into our car and drive up to Scranton, Pennsylvania to spend the weekend at Grandpop Finnegan's house. I'd have Saturday to play with my old friends from the neighborhood. Baseball, basketball, cops and robbers. Between games, we'd head down toward Green Ridge Corners, stopping in at Handy Dandy for caps for our cap guns, or to Papsy's or Simmy's for penny candy. Simmy's was right next to Joseph Walsh's storefront insurance agency, so we'd pass right by the crucifix in the window. It wasn't unusual or at all odd to us to see a crucifix in a place of business. A lot of the people who shopped at the Green Ridge stores were Irish Catholics like us. We never thought about it one way or another. Seemed to us like most of the kids in our neighborhood were Catholic, and we all knew what was expected of us. If we saw a nun on the street on our way into Simmy's on a Saturday, we'd tip our caps. "Good afternoon, sister." And we'd always hold the door for her. The priests were a presence around the neighborhood, too, and they warranted respect. My grandpop might complain about Monsignor Vaughn, who was always asking for more money, but nobody in Green Ridge passed a priest without acknowledging him. "Good afternoon, Father." Many of the businesses in Green Ridge dated back 50 years, when the coming of the first electric trolley line sprouted these tightly packed neighborhoods, where the bootstrap Irishmen could move their families for fresh air and a little patch of green lawn. My mom had been to some of these stores when she was a little girl. Once we'd spent our limit on penny candy from Simmy's, Charlie Roth, Larry Orr, Tommy Bell, and I would head toward the Roosie Theater for the 12-cent double feature, usually a pair of westerns or Tarzan. If we had time to spare after the movies let out, we might stop in at Thompson's Market. Mr. Thompson kept a live monkey in the store, so even if we couldn't afford more candy, it was worth the stop. We might linger in front of Evelyn and E. Paul's, too, waiting for the aroma of homemade candy and ice cream to waft by. But when the sun started to drop, Charlie, Larry, Tommy, and I began to make our way home, heading down East Market Street to the Lackawanna River. Stunted little 8-foot trees lined the bank on our side of the river, so we'd swing on the branches, reenacting scenes from the Tarzan movie we'd just seen. The bigger adventure was crossing the river at a gallop on top of 16-inch pipes. We knew we probably shouldn't. The Lackey was a sewage dump in the 50s and filthy. Our parents were always warning us away from it. But as long as we didn't fall in, who would know? Running the pipe was hardly a mortal sin. When we'd finished at the river, it was usually supper time, so we'd pick up the pace, through the alley behind Richmond Street, which was a string of one-story garages. Tommy and I would run the roofs of the garages, leaping from one to the next. "Ground's the swamp, touch it and you die, eaten by alligators." Charlie and Larry usually took their chances with the alligators. Sometimes one of the Richmond Street residents would open a back window and give a holler, "You boys get down off those garages." Anyway, it was usually near dark on Saturday evening before Charlie, Larry, Tommy, and I made it back home. Sunday was different. That day was reserved for family. It started with Mass. My attendance was not optional. The entire Finnegan clan rode over to St. Paul's Catholic Church together, and church always felt like an extension of home. I had already worked my way through the questions in the Baltimore Catechism. Who made us? Who is God? What is a spirit? What do we mean when we say that God is all good? And the answers. For the word of the Lord is right, and all his works are done with faithfulness. He loveth mercy and judgment. The earth is full of the mercy of the Lord. I could practically recite the entire catechism. I'd memorized the Lord's Prayer and the Apostles' Creed. I'd been to my first confession. My grandpop Finnegan had taught me to say the rosary, and every night when I went to kiss my grandpop goodnight, he'd remind me, "Three Hail Marys for purity, Joey." It was a long time before I understood he was talking about chastity. In the beginning, I thought he meant nobility or purity of cause, ideas that tracked with the sermons we heard at St. Paul's. It was more about doing good than being good. After Mass, the Finnegans and their friends would gather at my grandpop's house at 2446 North Washington Avenue, out at the end of the trolley line. Dinner was already cooked, warming in the oven, so the women took their ease in the dining room, thumbing the lace tablecloth, having tea. Meanwhile, Grandpop, his pals from the neighborhood, maybe a crony from the Scranton Tribune, and my Finnegan uncles, Jack and Boo Boo, settled in at the kitchen table. They'd sit in the spreading afternoon light talking sports and politics. These men were educated, informed, and eclectic, and they loved to debate. They'd argue local politics, state politics, world events, Truman against MacArthur, Truman against the steel companies. They were Truman Democrats, working men, or sons of working men, but they had to admit Truman might have gone too far when he tried to take over Youngstown Steel. Probably the Supreme Court was right when they knocked him back. A president's a president, not a dictator. It seemed un-American. Still, at least he was upfront about it. That's the thing they liked about Harry Truman. No artifice. He knew where he stood, and he wasn't afraid to say it. The fellows at Grandpop's table didn't trust the new Democratic standard-bearer, Adlai Stevenson. They thought he might be a little soft. They were willing to give Eisenhower the benefit of the doubt. He was a hero of the war, after all. My dad, who didn't join in the talk much, trusted Ike because he had been able to win a war while negotiating the competing national prerogatives of the Western Allies and the substantial egos of Franklin Roosevelt, Winston Churchill, Charles de Gaulle, Field Marshal Montgomery, and General Patton. Dad thought Eisenhower was a man with ballast, a leader. But the Finnegans wanted to argue Ike's policies. I found myself drawn to my grandpop's kitchen by the pace and power of the volleys, and although I was too young to merit a regular place in these arguments, the men didn't mind if I stayed around to listen from time to time. Even when it turned to local politics, the doings in Scranton and Lackawanna County, and the talk got heated, they never shooed me. One Sunday, as I remember it, they were on the case of a local poll they called Patrick. A slick Irish operator, friend to the diocese, friend to the working man, friend to his neighbors, friend to his family. Maybe too good a friend. I guess Patrick's political favors, even in the days of patronage, had often caught the attention of the local newspapers. Some of the younger guys thought it was time for Patrick to move aside, time to put a more modern sheen on the Democratic machine in Scranton. But I noticed my grandfather was defending Patrick, even when his friends kept attacking him. After a while, my grandfather stopped defending and did something he'd never done in these Sunday talkathons. He turned to me and said, "Joey, you're wondering why Pop likes Patrick." "No, no, no, Pop. No." "You like Mr. Scranton, don't you, honey?" What was I supposed to say? You didn't lie at Grandpop Finnegan's table. To me, William Scranton was the epitome of an upstanding citizen. He was the sort of man my dad respected. Mr. Scranton was descended from the town's founding family. He'd been a flyer in the war like my hero uncle. He was a well-educated man and a civic leader. "Well, yeah. Yeah, Pop, I like him." "Joey, let me tell you the difference between Patrick and Bill Scranton. When I ask Patrick for a favor, he might say yes and he might say no. He might look at me and say, 'I'm sorry, Ambrose, I'm going to cut your heart out.' I can deal with that. Whatever Patrick has to say, he's going to say it to my face. I might not agree with him, but he thinks enough of me to tell me to my face." My grandpop called me over to his chair, and as I moved beside him, he put an arm around my waist and pulled me closer.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?